Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? Excuse me. It's a Wednesday. It's not a Wednesday. It's a Thursday because we were moved to Thursday evening this weekend, but this is the place. And I was going to say, figure out a word that rhymes with place, but it escapes me for the time being. But this is the time on a Thursday, the K. Thompson Live Show. I'm Citizen Payne. Mom is on assignment in heaven, and you know what's going down this week, jumped off in the beginning of the week, is the impeachment trial of Donald Trump. Trumpity is on trial, and it is a spectacle, really a spectacle, something not to be missed. And if you've been watching a little bit, the Dems present their case today, and yesterday they were going back and forth. voting on was yesterday or day before voting on what amendments or whether or not to have witnesses, and you know, I don't know how you can have a trial with no witnesses. That's kind of an admission of guilt, an admission that you're trying to hide things if you don't want to hear from people and stuff like that. But hey, everything is topsy-turvy. And let me get Brother Byron Saunders. We got Brother Wayne Gilman, the newsman, going to call in eventually. I know that Brother Byron is close proximity to what's going down there in the swamp, as Trump liked to call it. But there's a swamp. He's the main swamp monster, swamp dweller that brought all the swampness. Let's go to Brother Byron Saunders. Brother Byron, what's happening, brother?
Yes, sir. Here I stand in the muck and the mire of the cesspool, also known as the swamp. Testimony is ongoing as we speak, and as Gil Scott Heron eloquently put it, the revolution will not be televised. It will be live and in living color. So for those of you who are still looking for Ellen DeGeneres, or perhaps Wheel of Fortune, or maybe it's Jeopardy time where you are, no, you need to tune in to the impeachment trial and stop watching game shows. This is the real deal, people. It is serious about our government, and let you understand and know that the charges being brought to forward, you've watched Paris, Hill Street Blues, SUV. I mean, the shows, Erica, Ad Infinitum, police shows, and just the show. Everyone knows how the presentation.
Well, you're breaking up. You're breaking up massively there because we heard you say SUV, SUV, and other
things. Right.
What
you know, a good presentation about the facts far outweigh the histrionics. And let's face it, you and I are actors. If you were to grade the performance of both the presentations from the plaintiffs and the defense side, based on acting alone, Eric, who gets the Academy Award for Best Presentation?
Look, I don't know about that. I know Republican or the president's lawyers aren't going to get any awards. But, you know, that's the whole thing. I've been able to tell that they've been lying right from the very beginning.
I know, right?
to see really how bad that they are at being liars, or what's even worse, I guess, is how little they are concerned at perfecting their lies and being good liars. So, I mean, you know, I've been able to see through them right from the very beginning. Let's go. We got Brother Wayne just calling in here. Let's get him in on the conversation. I know he has covered an impeachment trial before. Brother Wayne Gilman, how you doing this evening, Brother Wayne? What are your thoughts?
I'm hanging in here, man. I tell you, you know, we are living in exciting times. I just hope that everything that is being projected on the screen and heard on radio is resonating with the American populace that has some degree of understanding and common sense, you know, that we are on the precipice of what could be a historical moment that will alter the political landscape of this country for, you know, God knows how long. And I am just amazed at the behavior of the Republican senators that are there. Just a reaction. I'm not saying I shouldn't cast aspersions against all, but the few that have come back, you know, the ones that are, you know, definitely in the president's corner, disappointing, just totally disappointing. And as you've said time and again, Eric and Byron, that you know, history will definitely record this, and we'll just have to wait and see what happens, what the outcome is going to be.
Go ahead. Finish your point.
No, I was just going to say, if Adam Schiff could be the Democratic presidential nominee, I mean, he has done a dynamic job, you know, not to cast any doubt about the ones that are currently running, but, you know, it just listening to him and watching him handle the Senate floor like as if he was in his own courtroom. You know, it was just amazing. And just a defining moment.
You were talking about some of them, or not all of them, are messed. No, pretty much all of the Republicans are wrong on this one. They've all for the most part, all of them have voted against the amendments that Schumer was trying to put in to bring witnesses and procedural votes and all this stuff. You know, there is a point, there has been points in time in history of the world, and I'm going to limit my argument, limit this statement to the United States, but certainly can be applied in the world, that there have been times when the majority of areas, of nations, of countries, of cities, of towns have been morally wrong. When America practiced slavery for a couple hundred years, and then Jim Crow, and then the school, the pipeline, prison system, and all of the systems that we have, there's a moral bankruptcy in the fiber of the majority of people, because only way that those systems come in place is that the majority of the people are cool with that, that they at least condone that. So to say that half America voted for Trump, no, I'm going to say half of America, as in the 50s and in the times of slavery, there's a large population of our country that is morally wrong, morally bankrupt, that are hateful people. Clearly, that is the case. And there's no two ways, there's no gray area about it that they constantly like to point to. They constantly like to fall back on this kind of gray area, this kind of in-between loophole thing. That's because that's what the Electoral College is. It's their loophole, their get out of jail, where they don't have to seem what they truly are, which is evil at nature, evil at heart. Right?
Well,
if you're going to support this man, reasonable-minded people clearly see that this guy is dishonest, that he has taken dishonest steps, that he is doing things that are detrimental to everybody for his own sake. So if you can't clearly see that and clearly address that in a reasonable scenario, that's what they're talking about as they try to talk process in the trial. If you can't reasonably see that, or you choose reasonably not to see that, then there's a question about you morally, you're going to say, Wayne.
No, I agree with you. I mean, the thing is, and you know, we would have to do a forensic examination of every American who really can trace their origin outside this continent. You know, as you well know, they're not the original people here. But the bottom line is two things that you pointed out. The whole concept of having the Electoral College, from what I read once, was to prevent a populist candidate like a Donald Trump from ever being in a position, you know, where there was a system of checks and balances. It was also to assist those states that didn't have a fair share in what, you know, larger states and developed areas of the countries had. But right now, I think the popular vote should count. That thing should be dismantled. Of course, it would take, you know, you'd have to go from state to state to vote that, to get an accurate count of that. But, you know, aside from that point that you made, I was just wanting to throw out here, there have been a couple of polls that recently revealed that a large majority of educated white Americans would like to see the witnesses come before this panel to just evaluate what is going on. And again, it's just difficult to paint with a broad stroke, but I think if there's anything to be said, if there's any, weight to what these polls are saying, there's a fighting chance that this man has got to be removed. Because, I mean, he is totally out of character compared to any president that we've ever had. And I know this, he is playing on the minds of those Americans who fear that the scale's changing in a more, I don't even want to say cosmopolitan, but just basically a more racially evenly divided country. And that's the problem. And more than that, the fact that there'll be other people of color who will have opportunities. I'm not just talking about black people alone, Asian, Latinos, other people who would have an opportunity to rise up, you know, and basically uphold what this nation stands for, you know. And just listening to some of the arguments that were raised by Schiff in his presentation to counter whatever defense is coming with Trump's team, it just goes back to how and why, you know, my parents came here, why your family came here. You know, I mean, well, obviously everybody's story is different, you know. I can identify with the middle passage because my parents at one point, my ancestry goes back to African slavery, but from a different perspective. But the bottom line is, this is a republic, a democratic republic. And, you know, no one is above the law. And I just don't see how some of these arrogant, you know, self-centered, it's all about me because I need to hold on to this political seat, just would rather throw that crap out the window like it's nothing, like it's meaningless in self-preservation of their political status.
Yeah, well, Byron could speak best to the history of the Electoral College, right? And go ahead, Byron.
Just to say, the Electoral College obviously established to compensate the South for not being a part of the Industrial Revolution. Remember, when this country first got started, there were two elements that were happening. One, globally, the Industrial Revolution was overtaking the agrarian society's reliance upon growth of commodities. The Industrial Revolution was all about unions. It was about factories, about warehouses. It was about mass production. And it fueled the economy of the North, being New York and Wall Street, whereas the South was fueled by its growth and reliance of cotton and sugar. It were commodities. Who were the workers for cotton and sugars? They're slaves. And in order for the South to get full representation in elections and in Congress, the Congress concocted an idea to make a slave three-fifths of a person so that the South would then, for every slave, would be given an additional head count so that they could get full representation in Congress by apportionment and by the establishment of the Electoral College so that they could have a balanced amount of votes when it came time to interpreting the national vote for elections on a national level.
Okay, let me stop you right there, Byron. You're saying that because of the growth of the technology, so to speak, in the North, and it was causing more people, the population, to grow up there, to balance it off. The land, the slave owners in the South, were able to count every slave as 3/5 a person. Is that why?
Yeah, and basically they established a system in which to give the South an opportunity to have additional head counts vis-a-vis what we're doing right now.
Right. They have additional head counts because
that's
the population
right.
in the North was growing at such a rapid
pace.
So the South
was
given that additional head count to keep pace or to balance them off so they wouldn't be. I see what you're saying. And so that's how the Electoral College came into effect.
That's right. And ever since then, it has made a determination so-called for balance, but who's balance? And that's why reapportionment and gerrymandering are becoming so critical to the national discussion about voter suppression and voter rights, is because in that same context that the Electoral College was created, the Southern strategy has used to create districts that split up and reduce the voting power of the African American vote.
Southern strategy being the crazy drawing of congressional districts. That's what
exactly.
That's what you're talking about when you refer.
That's all related to that. Yes.
Right. What I hear in your description and explanation of the Electoral College and how that broke down is also in that very system, the abuse of slavery. Once again, how slavery was used and our bondage was used to benefit them to the fullest, to maximize and to work against us to the fullest. And even in that the fact that the population in the North was growing so much that they needed to be able to use, they wanted to use some the slaves in some kind of way. They didn't want to give them full citizenship, but wanted to make them 3/5 a person. It's just the disgusting abuse of that whole system to use our very energy and life force up to the fullest extent. It is the true essence of deviousness, their white supremacy.
And Eric, Eric and Wayne, you have to understand the depth of the concept, because when it came to the Monroe Doctrine,
repeat that, please, because you broke up a little bit. You break.
The Monroe Doctrine and the Battle of New Orleans, the Louisiana Doctrine created the import of new states coming into the Union beyond the 13. New states coming into the Union were either identified as free states or slave states, which gave acknowledgement again to the head count in Congress as well as in the Senate based on apportionment of that head count to create for, if we bring in a free state like Kansas, we'll bring in a slave state in Missouri.
But
you go to John Brown's
room. Hold on.
That's how this country did this.
Let me hold on.
Yeah.
If you were brought in as a slave state, when you were brought in as a slave state, that means you were brought in under that Electoral College system, correct?
Exactly. That's correct.
I see.
And then as a free state, think of the Missouri and Kansas. When you talk about John Brown's raids, we're talking about raids in Kansas, where Kansas was a free state, and he fought to continue to maintain Kansas as a free state. It just so happens the Confederate rebels from Missouri crossed over into Kansas and tried to establish by eminent domain its control of a free state like Kansas. This is what was going on in the West, guys.
Mm-hmm.
This is the history of this country. And it comes back down to what you're engaging in right now, because think about back in 1964, you know, the Democratic National Convention in Atlantic City. What was that argument about? That was the argument about Mississippi Freedom Party delegations coming in to break up the segregated South who were Democrats at that time. That's incredible, because then you want to know, how did the Dixiecrats, who were Democrats, become the new Republicans, who are Mitch McConnell and the brand of the Republicans that we have right now? Those were Dixiecrats, and they chose to walk away from the Democratic Party in 1964 at the convention. And you all may remember this, because this is where Fannie Lou Hamer was interviewed. That's right. She was interviewed, and we got Lyndon Johnson broke into her live interview to declare that Hubert Humphrey was his running mate and interrupt the conference and the conversations for which we as the civil rights movement were trying to break down the Democratic Party's segregated concept.
So much for Lyndon Johnson and his sensitivity to civil rights.
Well, he did. He had one, but he was forced to have one because the votes that were now beginning to count in a state like Mississippi, where 30,000 votes became the registered new vote as a result of the Voting Rights Act of 65. And it began to change the very nature and the balance of the Electoral College.
Well, let me
begin to understand why North Carolina right now has districts as wide as a block and as long as forever, because they've been breaking up by gerrymandering voting districts to dilute power of people of color's votes.
And it's shameful that still continues, but do you think that there is a need for the college at this point?
No. Not based on its original concept, because now because think about this. The migration of black and people in the 1950s left the South and came to the North.
Mm-hmm.
The North's voting situation exploded with more people of color. Now that the black folks are migrating back to the South because of warm weather, because of family, because of culture, because of the existence that so many of our extended families or our regular families are still trapped in the South, and the opportunity, just like in Montgomery, Alabama, where they just elected its first African-American mayor in over 200 and some years. And we're talking about Montgomery, Alabama. And why is it that the black vote was so important to the midterm elections? Once again, because of the influx of more people of color into the southern states. And then you have the hurricanes that devastated Puerto Rico. And where did those people get dispersed to? Not New York, not Boston. They're in South Carolina. They're in Cuba. They're in Florida. They're in North Carolina. And they're scaring the behemoths out of the Republican Party, because now that all that gerrymandering stuff that has literally have footprints in the Electoral College and racism in this country, and is exactly why we have the problems we're having today.
Well, the tables, you know, are turning now. You know, I mean, I understand exactly what you're saying. And again, I remember reading something about the reason, part of the reason why it was set up. I'm not disputing anything that you've said. You know, you're far more learned in that area than I am. But I just remember reading something about about a populist candidate, and that they didn't want anyone to ever get to the lofty point the way Donald Trump has managed to, mesmerize a certain part of the electorate, you know, to feel that, you know, they always thought that there would probably be somebody in the mix that would try to change the direction of the country and basically become a dictatorship, this authoritarian state that he's setting up, you know, that I'm hoping that will fall. Well, it's not even hoping. I don't see how Americans after a while could sit here and tolerate this continued behavior. I just believe that if even if he's acquitted in the Senate, this election coming up in 2020 is going to be so decisive. You know, it's just clearly going to, you know, basically, I just feel a momentum that we felt last year that we'll have to continue. You know?
Well, yeah, the momentum is that we have to continue the momentum, but don't get it twisted. That's the whole thing. Everybody was surprised about him getting elected, didn't think he could get elected. You know, we have to keep the pressure on to make sure that people come out to vote, and the people that have taken themselves out of the process, I guess those independents or people that just decided not to come out. We remember that there's some 310 million people in the country, and only about half of that populace came out to vote. Hillary getting about 65 million, Trump getting about 63 million. So that's that's about roughly a little less than half of the population that came out to vote. We need to get that motivated,
well,
at least a good. We need to motivate at least a good 10 to 15%, at least 10% of that population that didn't come out. There's no need to think that people are going to come to their senses and say, "I just can't believe," because history has proven that that hasn't been the case. If that wasn't ever the case in history, we would have never had slavery. We would have never had Jim Crow. So I've given up thinking that the people, good graces and reasonableness and common sense and all that stuff is going to come to a certain group of people who have exhibited that they don't have any of that at all, and they're not going to have it. And so waiting for them to realize and, let's pray that they get religion and whatever else, you know, just like waiting for these cats to decide and hope they do the right thing in the trial. They're not going to do the right thing. They've already shown that they're not going to do the right thing. And the reason why I like some of this stuff, try to watch it so I can witness it for myself, my own two eyes, is because you see where they really come from. You watch the little things that they do. For example, when McConnell said yesterday, I think it was, asking if Chuck Schumer wanted to stack all the amendments. Remember that? He said, you know, Chuck Schumer would put an amendment in for the subpoena to go through for McGahn, and they would have to go through the process all over again and vote, blah, blah. And so McConnell stands up in thinking that he's doing a gentlemanly thing, right, to show you just how much BS goes in it, McConnell stands up and says at this point, ask Schumer, do you want to stack the amendments? And we could just vote them all at once, as opposed to each going through each one, indicating that their minds have already been made up. There's no need to support each. There's no need to submit each individual amendment because we've already made up our minds that we're going to vote no on every single one of them. So those are the little things, and it was a commentator who brought that up, fortunately. But those are the little things that shows you really where these people are coming from and their true intent, that he has no intention of listening to each individual subpoena or amendment for subpoena or amendment to have evidence get in because their minds are already made up. So there's no need to assume that some of them are going to get religion and do the right thing, even though they claim and talk a certain game. We have to beat them and beat them bad, and it's like some people say, stomp a mud hole in there, you know what. That's what we have to do.
Well, I agree with you. You know, I mean, and I could I embrace the vernacular which you have projected that, but you know, I was just listening night before last to a podcast one of my former colleagues was doing, and he had thrown out this whole issue of what black folks should be doing now because there were so many millennials, and I remember having conversations with my nieces and nephews about, you know, who they would like to see in terms of running for the presidency as opposed to those who supported Hillary Clinton. And they got caught up in the Bernie Sanders tidal wave. And it seems like the minute he bowed out, and there's also a little sidebar with that now because I understand Hillary is stirring the pot, trying to create not create hostility. I don't think the hostility ever ended between Bernie and Hillary. I think they did what was politically expedient to bring the party together at the time. But obviously, I guess my point is what my former colleague was trying to say is that what are we going to do now with the millennial vote? Because that will make the difference. I think this is just what you were alluding to, Eric, a moment ago in terms of people, you know, coming out and just basically seeing what the big picture is. You know, we can't afford that. We need a landslide victory. And that's what needs to be done here. You know, we just can't sit back and allow for this guy to run another term and change the landscape of the U.S. Supreme Court far worse than what he's done already. And everything else that he's done to basically turn the tide of this country. You know, it's just one of those things. And I wish in a way that we could get some feedback from young people as to what they're thinking, you know.
The bottom line, all this young people, Bernie, this and that. Okay, Bernie never vigorously campaigned for Hillary the first time. This is what my cousin will tell you, and this is what other people in the party. He never, once they lost the nomination, he didn't come out vigorously campaign for Hillary. He could have done that, which he didn't do. And when you think about it, really, when you remember back, it's like, yeah, he didn't. He could have done that. But he was upset that he lost, and he's upset that he lost, he didn't encourage his people to go home, to go out and vote. He just let them do whatever they want. And here's the thing. That's indicative. This is what I'm talking about. Watch the little things they do. That's indicative. Let me finish my point. That's indicative of someone who can afford to lose. See, he can afford to. He was able to afford the potential, the possibility of a Donald Trump presidency. See, this is the thing with black people and why we can't look at our situation the same thing as the across the board mainstream when they do these stupid ass polls and all this other stuff that does not apply to you, black people. Does not apply to you. Can't afford to have this election talking about, oh, well, we need to have more than just let's get rid of Donald Trump. What more do you need? This man is actively trying to cheat in the next election, which is really where the travesty comes in, that these Republicans are allowing him, as we see him actively engaging in rigging the next election, that they're willing to let him continue to do that and continue to rob the bank vault, so to speak, while watching him in real time. So this is the thing. We don't need to talk about, oh, we need to have more than just, the candidates need to come at us with more than just, I'm not Donald Trump. No, all of the above is better than the other choice. All of the above is better than the other choice. We don't need no discussions about who. Make your choice. If they don't win, then you get behind the main choice, because all of the above is better than the choice. And this is the problem with Democrats. We start to want to discuss and intellectualize, and, well, I don't feel this, and we get all too damn politically correct, excuse my phrase, for lack of a better way of putting it, but we get too much like that, and we end up shooting ourselves in the foot and not winning nothing, because we want to make sure everybody's heard. And
maybe
and not missing.
You know,
and we miss the overall objective of the mission. I've heard, been sitting with people, heard people talking, just like the same notion that some young people, some black millennials talk about, well, I need something more than just some people died for me to have the right to vote, to encourage me to get out of fight. What the hell, what more do you need? What more do you need to know that somebody died for you to be able to do something? What the hell, man? What kind of nerve is that for someone to have the audacity to say, well, I need to, yeah, I know, people died for my right to vote. Yeah, they did. Yeah, that's real talk, and that's not just abstract. When people say people are starving in Africa, someone is starving somewhere in the world. It's easy for a child, someone with a child mentality, to have the response of saying, yes, I've heard that before. Yeah, that's childlike. It's a childlike response.
I understand your anger, man. And I mean, there's no.
So to say that we don't, you know, we need more than that. That's idiotic, and you're not going to win anywhere any time like that. And we're still going to always be asking for the next couple hundred years when we're going to have our rights, because everybody want to feel that their little 2 cents was taken into consideration as opposed to achieving the mission. You know,
well,
that's the bottom line. We need to win, man, because clearly their minds are already made up.
Oh,
Mitch McConnell told you that his mind, he said that before the trial even started, he worked with the president. And it has the nerve to say during the course of the procedural stuff, you just want to stack that up because we've already made up our mind about every single one of your amendments and everything. We've already made up our mind about everything you guys are going to say, and it's going to be no. So let me help you out with that. Don't bother to go through the trouble of individualizing it. You know,
it's a circus. In all honesty, Eric, I mean, even at the same time, I mean, there have been instances in which they know full well, I mean, they have constituents still to answer to. He didn't get his entire way all, because he wanted 2 days of this and it was going to be over. We're down now to three with the presentation in terms of presenting the argument. You know, we'll see what happens next week. You know, it may not work in our favor, but the bottom line is the momentum is there. And I also feel that the network coverage, I'm not just talking about cable TV, overall, I know when the impeachments, I was around for the, you know, old enough to remember when Richard Nixon was facing impeachment, and of course Clinton, there was far more coverage by all the networks. You were forced to watch something. And this is what I feel that we want to do. You know, I mean, that's also part of the problem. You know, I mean, we're competing against a Fox.
The right way.
You know, there's a lot of distortion on the other side that we have to compete against. We have all these social media outlets that have popped up, and they're doing their own thing. And, you know, people are getting lost in the sauce. I really feel in some instances there's a part of corporate America that would like to see the same old nonsense. They would like to see another 4 years of this garbage. I think the bankers want that, you know? It's just one of those things. So I embrace and understand your anger, you know? But I also feel, you know, and again, I just called his name a moment ago. I was listening to Mark Riley, and he had thrown that question out. And I just thought it was a very interesting question. It wasn't a situation where people responded.
What is the question?
About what are millennials going to do now if their guy is not the nominee? Are we going to sit home to protest the fact that, you know, our guy didn't get in? So why should we come out and vote?
Right,
you know?
That's the valid question.
That's why I say that
black people cannot allow themselves or assume that very broad statement when you say millennials, that they're not the mainstream is not including the black millennials in that specifically. They're talking about millennials overall. So when they go and do, as you guys know, do these surveys and they call and they do a sampling, just like it used to be back in the day, how many black people actually had Nielsen boxes in their homes? Not that many.
Oh, please.
And not that many are going to be
one.
When they do, when these samplings are done. Not that many. So they're not calling.
Yeah.
You know, that was the whole, that's traditionally been the thing about samplings and surveys, that they weren't calling. They were including minority households. So when you talk about what millennials want, millennials across the board is going to be different than the interest of the specific interest group of black millennials, because their interest is different. So we need to realize when they talk about a broad section, demographic of whatever, the electorate, that you have to put an asterisk next to that, because that doesn't necessarily include people of color. When they talk about we found that out when they talk about evangelical Christians. Evangelical Christians come to find out are just another term for white racist religious Christians. White people who want to go to church and call themselves racist, but want to call themselves religious. That's what
black people, because if it did, that they wouldn't be so locked, stopping, and off and filling all the checking all the boxes of what white supremacy is. Ironically, all those boxes, the same boxes are checked when you talk about white evangelical Christians. So, you know, that's what I'm talking about when they talk about these demographic terms that they want to invent from time to time during the electoral process, you know, mm-hmm. which is nothing but it's bullshit. I mean, you know, it's BS to me. Soccer moms, uneducated whites, non-college. Come on, man. It's 8 million ways to describe the same people, you know, liberal or not liberal. You know, you want to live around other people, you don't want to live around other people. It's real, real simple. But we have all these nuances, all these gray areas with which people don't have to fess up to what they really are. You know? Either you're cool with a diverse society or not. You know? That's the bottom mm-hmm. line. It ain't about, oh, give us your huddle. I mean, you know, and when you fall into the demographic or the category of being an immigrant, Wayne, so your experience and your belief, for example, is going to be different than my experience and my belief, even though we're both black men, the totality of our experiences are similar and the same, but the nuances that are going to be different. So my being someone who's indigenous, so to speak, from here, as opposed to someone who immigrated here, his family immigrated here, is going to have a different feeling about, oh, you know, you come to this country and it's the greatest country in the world and you have an opportunity to build up. I'm going to feel a little bit differently because I'm like, you know, people like myself who can date their lineage back to slaves and slave owners look at that notion of America a little bit different than people who come from a different country and kind of hear that tagline, that log line, that sales pitch about America, and are more apt to believe that as opposed to those of us who've been here and said, hey, yeah, right, yeah, give it your free huddle and everybody has a right to try and make it, but that ain't been our experience, you know?
Well, and I think that I understand what you're saying, and I think that a lot of the, you know, people who came from my part of the world, they got it right away. I also think that white folks did a lot of divisiveness to say, well, you know, you're better than they are because, you know, we can't get them to work, but we can get you to do this, and... you know, and that also created other rifts that need not be. You know, I always maintain if there was a race war here in this country, blacks against whites, you know, all those who feel that they're different because they came from this island or that country, you know, and didn't start out here in the States, it doesn't make a difference. They look at you one way and that's it, period. You know,
yeah,
it doesn't matter how
designated
you are.
Yeah, you go still. I mean, that's what I'm saying. There's no difference along those lines, right? Of people of the lineage of African descent or of that part of the world. There's no difference. There's a slight difference in where physically we came from off the globe. But the basic hell and the systematic racism, the global systematic racism against black and brown people still attacks us the same. So we, you know, we're obviously in the same tribe and obviously we're catching the same hell. The nuances of the hell are going to be different depending on the particular geographical location that we're from. You know, and how we come into that mixture. Of course, coming from the islands, some of our brothers and sisters that immigrate from the islands probably have experienced racism in a different form, than clearly we have. So we all understand that, but it's just it's different, nuanced. So that's what I'm saying. You know, when people fall into those broad sweeping demographics, there's always the caveat, there's always the asterisk that when they say, okay, all new Americans over in this line here, and all of the new Americans, new arrivals at Ellis Island get off and they all line up over there, and you got all the mixture, all the diverse races of the world, and the white Irish cop that's working that post that day at Ellis Island says, is separate and decides, all right, you new Americans, step over here, you new arrivals, except for you, dark one, and you, that dark one there, etc.
except for you.
Yeah.
Except for you, other dark one. Except for you, other dark one. So even in that, the broad sweeping generalizations, we are still plucked out and set aside because of who we are. You know, we don't even fit in that. And sometimes my point is, I guess, that sometimes we can think that we fall within those sweeping demographics that people try to put out a group of people. We can think that that includes our interest as well. When they say, Mark Riley says, what are millennials going to do now? Are they going to come out to vote? Black millennials will have a tendency to think that they fall into that demographic as well because they're millennial. But what they, the ones that aren't astute enough, hopefully they're getting more astute, but the ones that aren't astute enough forget that that doesn't necessarily include them in that demographic because there's an asterisk next to them because of who they are, you know? So, therefore, all the things that apply to all the millennials that all the statistics are showing and yada, yada, yada is not necessarily going to include my specific version of a millennial because I'm black.
Mm-hmm.
And so they fall into that trap, you know? Say, all millennials, we're not going to vote. You know, so our mission is to educate them and let them know that doesn't necessarily include you, black person.
Exactly.
You're still ostracized. You're still kept apart. You know. So, you know, we need to get everybody to realize that. You know, I think understand the mission. What's the mission? What are we all going to do? Okay, what's the game plan? Okay, they're not going to, or should they not come to their senses? Let's assume that these senators are not going to come to their senses and acquit this dude. What next? What's our game plan next? You know? What's the long game? How do we win this election? Because clearly, everything is stacked. They're not going to remove him from office. So that means we're going to have to rely upon an election. So how do we get everybody prepared to do that? And I think Nancy Pelosi, in taking her time with this, has played the game the right way. Because the only way that we beat this guy is for people to constantly be reminded he's a liar and a cheat, and he's a detriment to this country. And they need to be reminded of that every single day.
And he's so immoral. I mean, I people have got to see the distinct difference between, you know, his character and those who have held the seat before, you know. And that's the way I see it, you know. It just saddens me to think that we are living in a time that we have to even go through this sophomore and childish behavior that he brings about on a daily basis, the tweeting, you know, everything. You know, just it's depressing. It's depressing. You know.
Right. Also, too, when you realize that even his lawyers that are representing him in this trial here have been busted for lying and making stuff up. You know, and talk about some of the people that have been making serious contributions to the Democratic presentation of the case. You know, you got to give big ups to Val Demings and Hakeem Jeffries, members of the African American Congressional Black Caucus members that are on there. I'm wondering. I was talking to my cousin the other night, and I'm trying to figure out. And I think this is the first time that we've had African American representatives this highly involved.
As managers?
I'm just talking about highly involved in an impeachment process, period, not just as managers, but just being involved to this level. And we're trying to do some research. I'm going to do some more research on this. Perhaps, Byron, that will be something that falls in your category as to whether this being a first, that African-Americans are involved at this level in the impeachment trial.
I can tell you right now, since there have been only three impeachment trials thus far, you had Andrew Johnson, you had Bill Clinton, and now you have the current president. And yes, this is the first time African Americans on this level have been allowed to be a voice of the people. And it's important to understand and recognize that, because that, too, is the show of power of a majority. You see, part of our part of our initial problems, guys, is that we don't believe we are a majority. We have to stop acting like a minority. And it's a perception of mind over matter. We just won a midterm election through our power. African-American women, power. You know, the evidence is in the proof of the count of the vote, which is why it's so important to understand the wave that was ignited by this blue wave and black girl magic in cities and towns from Atlanta to Montgomery, Alabama, and you name it, all across those places where people and mostly women of color taking legislative positions, main areas where the decision-making of a community is now in the hands of some very powerful women. The media, who is owned by males, there's not a single media outlet other than Talk One and TV One, owned by a minority in the level that is allowed to get to most of the people. Why did Byron Allen want to take his suit to the Supreme Court? We know why. And the ultimate concept of us being a minority is being debunked every single day. And if I'm telling you, it all starts at the ballot box, guys. Now, I'm going to ask you a question, Eric, and cause especially you, Wayne. I may have asked this last week, it seems to me. But the incident on Martin Luther King's birthday in Richmond, Virginia. Gentlemen, they were allowed to assemble with guns loaded to the bear in 1995.
And who represents
Louis
Farrakhan?
That's right. 1995, Louis Farrakhan brought 1 million people to the Mall of the Capitol. If any one of those, if we had had armed weapons like they did, you know what would have happened? The same thing that happened to the Black Panther Party in California under Ronald Reagan's administration as governor, that the Black Panthers stood up and said, we're going to defend our community. That was just a handful. We had thousands of really mentally deranged white people standing there to engage might makes right in a public forum, and it is insulting the fact that it was held on Martin Luther King's birthday, who
was
killed by a white man. That's right. It done deliberately. And this is the kind of thing that we have to stand up and say, no more, because it's optics, the visual. Just like what's going on in the Senate right now. It's the optics of truth over untruth. We're in a very dangerous period for our nation, and what's being given, whether you're watching it or not, and like I said a few weeks ago, when the president was impeached, like a dog with soup cans tied to its tail, he will be heard wherever he goes from this day forward as the impeached criminal. That's an optic.
Byron,
that's why
that
Nancy Pelosi was saying that. That's why she was.
That's right.
I mean, you really, you know, for people, this is the part of the messaging that we need to get through to people. That's what she was saying. That forever be known as being impeached, and no matter what you've done, sir, no matter how many people you're able to fool, sir. And I'm channeling my brother Hakeem Jeffries when he was answering Jay Sippel the other night. No matter what you've done, sir, this will always follow you all of your days.
Exactly.
So your money, your lies, none of that will change the fact of what you did. And so long after everybody's dead and history, this is going to be who you are, and this is going to be who the senators and the Republicans are, the Republican Party, that enabled that and was down with him. We got about 6 minutes, but it's just going to be, I think it'll be less in their, it'll be in their personal histories following them forever. But in terms of what's going to be the immediate reaction, the immediate punishment for them, I don't think that it's going to be as swift and as immediate as many of us would like. You were going to say, Byron?
Oh, I was just going to say that you're right. It's not going to be as swift, but it's going to be as long-lasting. Because this is something you just can't walk away from, as I said. And I think to coin Representative Hakeem Jeffries, whose closing arguments for today was brilliant. And he said, he called what we're engaging in right now is a corrupt parade of criminals, one after another, being identified and tagged in a manner, in a very methodical process of giving you the facts as they happen in a timeline that without any other evidence to be to clear or disprove it, is that this was a criminal action right from the very beginning. And they figured they could do this by removing key elements in our governmental structure. This is why it's treason. This is why it's sedition. This is why it's sowing the seeds of anarchy. And the Republican Party is going to have a hard time, a long time, really cleaning up the vomit that they have created with their obstruction. It really is, and the stench of it is going to be a long time, too. In the meantime, what's going on in Puerto Rico? What's going on in Kansas City? What about these gun killings that are still exacerbating and destroying our infrastructure of social civil actions in our communities?
Yeah, it's
okay.
Sobering.
That's what, and it's very sobering. But you know what? It was inevitable to happen. They kept pushing racism and intellectual superiority and their white racism to the level where now the pot is about to explode. And it's exploding right where it's supposed to, right there in the U.S. Senate with a Supreme Court justice sitting at the table right at the head. Now, that's the history that will be written. And you're right, whether they convict him or not may not even be the issue right now, because the optics are going to go all the way up to the election. No matter what is said after this is presentation, this will be the front page story for every politician running against every Republican in this country.
Exactly. And I tell you, it's very, very telling for them. I mean, regardless of who they think they may have as their constituents supporting Trump, you know, there's about to be some major campaign stop in Wildwood, New Jersey, coming up, I think, next week or this weekend.
Right.
And, you know, there's a lot of coverage about that. And to be honest with you, I just don't see where people would even want to turn out. But I guess there are areas of the country as close as New York that still feel that this man is worthy of what he's doing. You know, maybe it may be just a whole effort to bring stir up business in that area in the off season, but the bottom line is just that he doesn't need any more promotion than what he's getting. I just hope that he's just removed from the scene. Hopefully, this effort will legally do that without any backlash. You know, I mean, I think Pence needs to go too. You know, but at this point,
He will. He's engaged. He's involved. Everyone in his administration is involved in this. Every last one of them, guys. It's not just for Trump.
That's right.
They're going to have to clean house.
A whole bunch of them are going to go, and a whole bunch of them are going to go. And it's not going to be, unfortunately, via the trial. We got about another minute, 40 seconds to go. So.
Because it's political.
You know, it's not gonna. Yeah, it's not gonna happen. I mean, they're gonna have to get voted out, and hopefully that they get really what they deserve, because it is treasonous acts that they've been committing. Byron, you want to let the people know as we jump off now, give me a little send off, my brother, and the inspirational words
power
that you always have.
To vote. That's right. Never give up the power of your vote. Use it. We are the new majority. And you can take this country to the place where it should be. Peace and love always.
All right. Talk to you later. Talk to you next week, Brother Byron Saunders, the historian. Brother Wayne Gilman, the legendary newsman. let the people know how you feel about the situation.
Hey, man, I'm just going to quote the Reverend Jesse by saying, keep hope alive, man. We got to get past this. We got
to
get past
there it is.
You know?
Thank you, Wayne Gillen. We'll talk to you again next week. All right, my brother. This has been the K Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. You can reach us we're archived, so you can listen to us anytime your heart desires. And usually Wednesdays, 8 to 9 p.m. live. But if we're not, we're going to let you know when we are. We're hard to catch because we like to keep moving, because that's the way you're a moving target. And like Muhammad Ali says, I keep my feet moving. I'm kind of fast. Keep the camera moving and stuff like that. See you again next week. K Thompson Live. Love you, Ma. I'm Citizen Payne.